gonna send it to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hoping John would be here and run the camera. He does a pretty good job.
So do I.
Well, when you read through those questions, did anything, you know?
Some of them might have trouble. Some of them might have trouble answering.
You got them there?
I was gonna look them over again.
I got them on here.
Well,
I was gonna look them over. Politics. Were they politically involved?
Not very.
Politically informed? They talk about politics?
No, I never went to that. I think they were both Republicans. I'm sure Dad was.
How do you know that? What makes you think that?
No, I guess because it, I don't really know. nothing that I can say positively I know, unless he made some comment sometime that, you know, that he thought some Republican was the right guy. But as far as having a political discussion, I never heard anything like that.
Never heard him mention any national politics or anything. The local politics would have been who's, I remember when the, what's the guy with the clinic, Smith Clinic,
yeah.
When he ran for mayor, I forget what the discussion was, whether he was for or against the firemen getting a raise or getting the pension or getting a day off or whatever it was. I can't remember them ever talking about anything else, and that was just strictly a local thing. And I know that I think he ran for governor then or something. And
the congressman Smith.
Congressman, that's right. And Dad was saying he was going to vote for him to get him out of town so he wouldn't be mayor anymore. Because he apparently voted against the firemen's whatever it was that they were after. And of course, Dad was in the firemen's union.
Mm-hmm. But I think they were. He was a Democrat, wasn't he? As a congressman, I think he was a Democrat.
I don't know.
I don't know for sure. I would bet the farm on it.
That's the same clinic. They still have it.
Oh, yeah.
Smith still control. Yeah. He had two or three boys that are doctors, didn't he? The old man.
Yeah. I had Frederick and Phil, but they're good. I think
they're as old as we are. They're older than we are.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because they both of them belonged to Rotary when I did, and I would say Philip is probably at least 10 years older than I am, and Frederick more than that. I would imagine they're probably pretty much out of it by now, other than maybe they're on the board or something. But I don't really think they had much to do with the management of it at that time. They had sort of relinquished control to a board of governors or something like that.
Yeah,
they
got
more than
that. What about religion?
Well, you mentioned about Mom always going to church and Dad didn't, and that's the only time I know Dad went to church is when one of the grandkids got baptized. You remember
or something like that. Maybe a couple of times in my lifetime was he ever there.
I can only remember him going home when a grandchild was being baptized.
I heard somebody say, well, something about you don't go to church, and he said,
I have all my religion in my wife.
Yeah, in my wife's name, something like that, yeah. I don't know that he ever gave her a hard time, though. I mean, he let her do her thing with the church, never, no problem.
The ladies' society. And
she let him not go to church without aggravating him all the time about it or anything.
Well, he'd usually stay home on Sunday and fix dinner. He always had a big Sunday dinner prepared. He fixed like spaghetti a lot of times, like they made it at the fire department. And
did you guys always go to? She always took you to church.
Oh, there wasn't any choice. Yeah. Yes, sir. We went to
Sunday school and church ever since we were old enough to be carried.
Yeah. Without fail.
And that went right up to high school.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
We stayed for church, and then by the end of the last hymn, we both broke out of the church and went out the back door and across Prospect Street to the fire department, whether Dad was there or not,
and
read the funny papers, because we couldn't afford to have, I mean, the Citizen was a nickel and the Plain Dealer was a nickel, and that's too much, so we read those over there.
And when Mom would get done jawing with everybody, she'd drive into the alley and we'd come out of the fire station, get in the car and go on.
When we got sort of good and ready.
Sometimes play a little coaxing to get us out of there.
Yeah. Dusty, send those boys out here.
That's how we got to know the firemen better, just going over there on the Sunday morning, Dutch Manette and
Dutch Rub.
Yeah, that's where we learned about the Dutch Rub.
Tear the hide right off your head. And you just stand there and grin.
Yeah. Remember at Dad's funeral when he was there? And I said to John, I says, remember when he used to give us the Dutch Rub when we were little kids like that? I says, I think we can handle him now. Let's give him a Dutch Rub. And he looked at us. And But Dad was involved in other things besides politics. I'm surprised he wasn't in politics if it was a nonprofit thing, because he was president of the Humane Society for years and years. He was treasurer of their union for years and years. He was involved in the American Red Cross training, accident, you know, first aid training and so on. He did that for years.
Well,
it belonged to the VFW and to the American Legion.
American Legion is one where we used to go to the monthly potluck.
That's right. That was non-profit.
It goes along with, their social life. I guess that, as far as their social life together, that was about it.
Yeah, well, it's once a month go to a potluck at the American Legion.
And then a potluck for the American Legion up at the gas company. The gas company had a hall down in the basement that was, I guess, free.
Available, yeah, probably.
And, legitimate groups wanted to meet there. They had a little kitchen thing and whatnot, and you clean it up when you're done, that type of thing. And every month, during the winter months, go up there for a potluck supper.
And then he got involved with the cemetery. And he ended up as president of the
Chapel Hill.
Of the chapel. Well,
chapel
that
Heights.
Was it.
Chapel Heights.
Chapel Heights. What was the original name?
Forest Glen.
Forest Glen something Gardens.
Forest Glen Memorial Gardens.
Memorial Gardens, yeah. And then they changed the name. They got the, that was during the Depression. They just barely survived.
Bankrupt.
I guess maybe they did go bankrupt.
Yeah, went bankrupt.
And they built that just before the Depression, because that big tower with the chimes and the carolines or whatever they called it out there, that a lot of those things just sort of fell apart. They didn't get much attention during, in fact, they're sort of falling apart now. But
you say during the Depression.
That was
I can remember when they were building that thing. I can remember going out there. And
I said before, maybe it was right. It probably in the 30s.
It would have had to be
during the Depression.
Yeah, mid-30s, I would think, when that was built.
That was a fairly new concept at that time of having, no memorial, no stones, just the brass or bronze flat markers.
Marker.
Memorial Garden.
Well, what about, did Grandma, did her family go to church? The Webers?
Oh, yeah.
All the Webers
went to that Prospect Street. The German Methodist Church? Yeah, that's how they got started.
Well, Paul didn't.
He
were Lutherans. He
converted because, you think Cora's going to convert to?
No, I don't. Well, who? Well, Aunt Helen started going there when she came back to Marion.
But I know.
I'm sure the family, started out in the church.
It was a German Methodist church.
They even spoke German originally. sermons were in German there way back when they started.
I think they stopped speaking German during World War I when
people were popular.
Yeah.
What about the Boyd family? Did they go to church?
I don't know much about them. Molly was probably religious. I don't know if any of the others.
Well, yeah, she
was. Carrie came to the church when he came back. For years he went there. But I don't know what. If they had
Uncle Carrie?
Yeah, Uncle Carrie.
Yeah, he came to church there for a while. Well, I guess until he married Nora.
Yeah, moved to Prospect and then we lost. I don't know what they did.
I don't know if they ever went to church down there. I think he probably just went to church there because he didn't have anything better to do. Mom invited him or something, would be my guess. He didn't have anything else to do, so why not? And he'd meet a girlfriend. I don't know. But Molly was always reading the Bible when we'd go over there and see her. She'd always read the Bible and she'd show us the Bible there.
Yeah, she could quote and so on. I think she was very religious.
Figure out why people always went visiting on Wednesday anymore. They used to go on Sunday, but now everybody seems to go visiting on Wednesday.
That was after got little Sunday, started losing their marbles.
Yeah, it was Sunday, but for her it was Wednesday.
Yeah, she had a lot of confusion. What a gentle person she was.
Soft-spoken, always smiling.
Was she Grandpa Boyd's sister?
Mm-hmm. One of them.
Yeah.
His other sister lived out in Missouri, and we never really knew her. In fact, I can only ever remember seeing her once.
We went out to visit her once when we were little kids, and they had it was just a regular old poor dirt farm. Now, I don't know where she found this guy, but she didn't marry him for his money, that's for sure. And that was during the Depression, and during probably the dust storms and everything else, it was pretty tough living where they lived. And they had one son, Boyd
Audley.
And we lost track of him. Is he still alive?
Well, we stopped and saw him out there once on vacation, you know.
Yeah, you did.
You were
with him. Yeah. Yeah, but I wonder where she met him. I mean, was he from Missouri or did they?
I have no idea.
They met him in Ohio and they moved out there to farm.
I have no idea.
You need to talk to Lucille probably. She'd probably remember that. She's what, 10 years older than we are? 12?
Yeah,
she just turned 80. She's 13 years older than I am. So she probably remembers. She might.
Only thing I can remember about going out there to Missouri that time is I was out. Seemed like in the chicken yard, and I had a butcher knife that was digging in the dirt. And the butcher knife broke, and something flew in my eye, and they had to take me to the doctor. I can remember that.
I don't remember that.
Well, I do.
I guess you would.
That's about all I can remember about it.
Yeah.
I think she came to Ohio one time, but I.
Seems like she did.
She probably stayed with Lucille or something. I don't remember. But, you know, again, social life. Dad and Mom used to go out and rouse Lucille a lot.
We went out there once a month at least in the summertime.
I was going to say more likely twice a month.
Almost.
You know, during harvest season, he was out there. Anytime they threshed, Dad was there. Or when they butchered, Dad was there and helped out.
Well, later in years, they always went to, those rainbow dinners.
We're the American Indians we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the 42nd Rainbow Division.
But they were out there, and we'd just go out, of an evening.
Well, in the summertime, we
make ice cream.
Were they going to Ralph and Lucille or to?
No, they went to Ralph.
Yeah, because Molly wasn't.
Well, until she died, she was there, but that wasn't really the reason. They got to know Ralph and Lucille more than.
Well, Molly, She really didn't contribute or participate in the conversation or anything. She just sort of like
sitting rock.
Shake her head. She never said anything that I can remember unless you specifically said something. And I guess I can remember a couple of times when Betty and I would be out driving around on Sunday or something and stop by there and she was there. Maybe she was there by herself and we'd talk to her a while. But other than that, I don't ever remember having any conversation with her or even participating in a conversation. Other than, you know, when we'd go out there, Mom would say something to her, Dad, and you speak to her when you go in. Other than that, you know, it didn't make much sense to try to talk to her.
It must have, I wonder if it was just the farm that attracted Grandpa, being going out to the farm and so. Having grown up on the farm.
Yeah.
Well, he always went out there turtle. When he set his turtle traps, he'd go out there and set them out there and he'd go.
He's gone hunting. We had one that went out there. And they came in quite a bit for Christmas or Thanksgiving, things like that. They used to come in, visit.
And Dad then too stumbled onto the Ray Jacobs, another old Army veteran that he hadn't known was around. Found out he was farming out by north of Big Island there, south of Morrill, north of Big Island. And so they got to going out there then, and they'd make ice cream. And then I can remember, well, we went out there when they'd make hay and, you know, drive the tractor and pull the hay wagon, stuff like that. When they made, I don't remember, he didn't thrash though. He didn't raise, you know, he raised cattle and he just made hay.
Well, he got out of it around 41 or 2 because he sold out to the
sold everything out and
defense
moved in there
department for, that's where they put the, one of those defense plans. I think that's what he sold. I thought that's what happened to his farm.
I don't remember anything like that.
Up there off in 23?
No, he was clear out there north of Big Island. He was out west of Starners yet, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
I thought think he was so.
North. Well, I may be out west.
Well,
scratch that.
You may be right. I mean, you were a couple years older, and
I don't even know who you'd ask now.
Well, if he sold land for the ordnance plant or the depot, then George and Margaret have a book on the ordnance plant and the depot. That's very interesting. You get out there next time, take a look at that thing. But a bunch of people
are that's written by?
Huh?
Do you know who that's written by?
I don't remember.
Charles Mosier.
Yeah, it was.
Really?
Did you see it?
No, but I've seen.
Well, Margaret and George do.
I've gotten into that part of the family, and I knew that he wrote that book.
Well, yeah, he did. It was Charles.
They've got a copy of that book, and it's got pictures of it and all kinds of stuff. And they got a list of everybody whose property was bought and what they paid for it. The whole schmear. It's really amazing the amount of information they pulled together for that thing. You know, they used to have prisoners of war out there, and they rented them out to local farmers, and whole stuff like that that I never really knew about. You know, I guess I'd heard there were POWs in Marion somewhere, but I had no idea how many or who they were or where they were. They had a whole pot full of German POWs out there. And, you know, they'd rent them out to farmers for hired hands, and you know, then when they went, after the war was over, and they went home, a lot of them wrote back, some of them came back to this country, and they liked it so well. It was really, I didn't, you know, I didn't get to read a lot of it, but I read quite a bit of it while we were there last time. That's really interesting. Yeah. A lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of work in that little bit.
I thought that's why he was more or less forced to retire. He wasn't really ready to retire, but so when you get a deal like that, you can sell the farm and make a big profit on it. Not a bad time
to
get
have an option to sell. They didn't really have an option. The government took it.
Oh, yes. Well, they come in and take it. But, I mean, they paid them.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm trying to think how we used to go to get there, his house. It seemed to me like we went out to Big Island and turned north and then went west yet. But he was on west of Starner.
He must have not been if the ordinance took him.
No, well, I thought that.
There's nothing else out there government owned, is it?
I thought he was trying to retire and.
West, where he's talking about? I don't know where.
I don't know of anything like that.
Could have gotten someone else out there, that you just went out there to.
I don't know. Don't know.
What about interests and pastime? Enough of pastime. I mean, I know Grandpa hunted and fished in the garden, but what about Grandma? What did she do?
Went to church. Went to the Women's Society.
Class meeting. She sewed. She made quilts. She made sewed pieces for quilts, stuff like that. A lot of hours doing sewing. She didn't do any gardening or plants at all. Anything out in the lawn, Dad did.
Did she make doilies? Or did?
She crocheted.
She was around there.
Well, yes, she did too. Yeah,
she did. She didn't knit, but she crocheted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she made rugs.
Yeah,
rugs, those kind of
crochet
things. Dyed old rags and stuff like that. And,
yeah, she did.
Yeah, she made a lot of that kind of stuff.
And she made candy and at Christmas. And
she baked. And baked every week.
Yeah.
At least every Saturday morning, she'd usually bake a coffee cake and maybe another cake and a pie or something
like
that.
Did a lot of washing and ironing, like white shirts, dress shirts. Yeah.
Well, Dad
wore those.
We wore them to school.
She washed and ironed about 18 dress shirts every week. And that, back then, they weren't like they are now.
They had to be starched and everything.
They had to be starched and ironed wet.
Manual.
Damped.
Ringer washer.
Well, Dad always helped her wash.
Well, she had that.
He ran the washing machine.
She got pretty proficient.
She put it around doing whatever, I guess, but basically he.
Yeah, that was a good deal that he, you know, he'd work 24 on and 24 off. So he was, they always
was home every day. Plus, he was always home on Thursday and later years after they got Thursday for Kelly, after they had a Kelly day.
Did you guys ever go up to Kelly's Island or Kelly's at the fire?
The fire cottage. We went up there a time or two.
Maybe twice.
Yeah. Oh, like the Union Kelly's had a cottage up there or something.
What was it called? White's Landing. Yeah. Up at White's Landing. It was east of west of Port Clinton, I believe. I think one day.
I think it was over around near Huron. I think it was over there.
I used to go up there with George, about this big Fetter.
That we all cemented together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rocks, made out of rocks that were cemented together to make a stone building. But instead of straight, it was these round rocks that looked like you jammed them into the cement, you know, that type of thing. I guess they were local rocks.
A lot of rocks available up there.
I don't remember if we shared that with anybody else at the time.
I don't remember.
People did that. You know, they have a couple families.
People families would do it.
If they were compatible or something. I don't know if anybody had been compatible with us. I mean, with Mom and Dad, with Mom.
Unless it was like somebody was Charlie and Ally Euro or somebody like that.
Charlie
was a fireman too.
Yeah.
They were neighbors. They lived, well, he lived like three doors up and across the street. But they never really socialized with them. As far as going anywhere or doing anything.
Well, Grandpa was a captain. Was he captain?
Captain.
He made captain and then was transferred out to the West Side Station at that point then. But that was a long time ago. He was out there, must have been out there, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, you know.
That's where he got Cookie.
Yeah, that's right.
He came
dog
out there.
Well,
picked up a dog that wandered in and got her for a firehouse
dog.
Well, she
wandered into the firehouse and
Or but you had her at home.
Yeah, then you brought her home.
He called every night when Dad worked, and you know, that was his night to work, he always called home around supper time. And he called home and said, you know, a dog came in, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's a nice dog, why don't you come and get it? So Mom got us kids in the car, and we went out there and got the dog. That's how I had this dog, Cookie. Had her for 15 years, probably.
I don't know. I know I was gone. And when I came back, I don't know whether it's back from the Army or back from college or something, but I know Mom called up and said that the dog had died, would I bury it? And so I did. Dad was too shook up.
Yeah, I remember that dog.
No, we were buried it. Down, you know, Ruth, what's her name? Had a lot way down on Spencer Street, down towards Mount Vernon. That's where he's buried. An empty lot, and Mom said, hey, you know, she won't care.
Why'd you go clear down there?
Huh?
Why'd you go clear down there?
Because I was told to. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to bury it on the property, I guess, or in the backyard, so.
Or buried Jack in the backyard.
Well, I don't know. Jack used to do it. That was
the first dog we had. It was a black cocker spaniel. That was our dog as kids, and somebody poisoned him. He died a miserable death there in the backyard of poisoning.
I think it's interesting that in your family that long ago you had a phone, and your mom
973 as a phone number.
And your mom drove in that time. Was that uncommon for women to drive?
Sort of uncommon for her to drive, yes. Especially her.
It's
not a character for her.
Right. If you knew what a nervous, her type person
and
she
can't
was.
And I believe that she took you to Toledo.
We went to Toledo.
She went quite
a few times.
Of course, traffic then was not what it is now, but.
In fact, it was almost desolate. If you had a breakdown, you would have been stuck there for a while.
Yeah,
and we never, with all the flat tires that people used to have, we never had a flat tire.
Well, the only incident I ever can remember is that time we came back when the brakes froze.
Yeah, I didn't even remember that.
Did you remember that? Boy, yeah. I do.
I can remember, though, on one of those trips, being behind a load of gypsies or something, a car full of, just crammed full of people, and a wheel came off and rolled.
Oh, I remember what Dad was driving then. Vacation somewhere.
Yeah, that's funny. To try these people and they're looking like this. There's a wheel going off. Joey just came off of the car.
She was pretty strong willed, though.
Well, at times. She could be. But,
yeah, she's a pretty good driver, I guess. Well, you know, she used to haul an old maid and an old widow lady lived there on Center Street near Clover. And every morning going to Sunday school or church, we had to stop and pick up Bertha Gracely and Mrs. Strausser.
She hauled
them. And you know, they'd always buy us a book or something for Christmas. And when they got
Mrs. Strausser's son was manager of Woolworths. We had a three, they brought us some nice Christmas presents.
Yeah.
I remember that, some nice stuff.
When they got older, you know, we'd pull up and Mom would pull up out in front and either Bob or me would have to run up to the house and give him an arm and help him out and down the steps and in the car and you know, and we did that for years. All done back and forth.
Mrs. Strausser had they were both hard of hearing. But she had a hearing aid. This was in the 30s. Probably goes back maybe even to the 20s almost, that hearing aid. It was a, you know, like the headphones today, little metal ones, but, and then a wire down into a battery in the box and so on. And darn things seemed to work. A little clumsy, but. And inside their house, they couldn't hear a doorbell, so they had a flashing red light. Somebody pushed the doorbell, you'd see a light, big red light come on. That's how they knew somebody's there.
Yeah.
You want to tell them about the woman next door to them? The old woman that says, This tree out in back is so ugly, when my husband dies, I'm going to have that thing taken down. I hate that tree. Don't you remember? Why are you kidding? You and I climbed up in the thing and started taking the thing down for her without asking her. We had big limbs coming down. And when she came out, she said, oh, what are you doing? You're ruining my tree. He said, well, you said you wanted the thing down, and we just didn't wait till he died. That's and Mom had to go over and apologize and so on. And, you know, lucky it wasn't a lawsuit. If they'd had law today, there would have been a lawsuit probably. But we were clear up on the top of the tree and sawing limbs off. You don't remember that?
Next door to Bertha?
Yes, next door to us on the east side. Big old tree.
Boy, you really conned me into some things.
Yeah. Today it seems stupid that we would do something like that. We just took the bull by the horns and was going to help her out.
Well, what did Grandma do then? I mean,
all she could do was apologize.
You put the limbs back.
Oh, no, no, I don't remember. I don't remember
anything. You tried for that.
No, I think. No, we thought we were doing her a favor.
Trouble about another tree, but not that one.
We thought we were doing her a favor. You wouldn't even have charger in. We're having fun. Taking a tree apart from the toilet at the top.
Well, but what kind of, I mean, was Grandma and Grandpa, were they strict parents or not? Or?
In some ways, I guess.
They weren't probably much more strict than any of the other parents in the neighborhood or anything. There just wasn't the same kind of discipline problems. And they tell you something, then you did it. And I don't remember having all these kids didn't talk back to their parents. I never talked back to anyone.
I got
knuckle,
and I got a knuckle sandwich.
I don't remember.
Cracked in the mouth. I got smacked a couple of times. You learned not to do it. But. They had some hard and firm rules that you followed, but yeah, we had, you know, we ran
but they
all over.
Beat them into you or anything.
We ran all over the county. We had.
Oh yeah, in that respect, you had
little kids. You wouldn't let your kids, you know, cross Route 42 probably, but man, we were, you know, clear over in Lawrence Orchards and past Grave Creek and up north.
We'd be gone for hours and hours and hours and hours.
And yeah, we'd be gone for it. And then after we got on bicycles, my golly, we'd ride clear up to Crystal Lake up to. Well, King's Mill out there, yeah, and out there to the Drake's Dam, all over the country. I can't imagine how many miles we put on bicycles. But.
And nobody, they never thought anything, nobody thought anything about it. Of course, neighbor kids did it too, everybody was doing it. Wasn't as if we were allowed to do anything else that anybody else didn't.
I guess parents were
more... Well, we never got into any trouble. We never really did anything to have anybody call the police or anything.
No.
The worst we did maybe was take a couple of apples out of that orchard behind the old poorhouse.
We paid for that dearly. Don't scare the daylights out of you. Yeah. Some old guy had come out of the county home, you know, and see us over in the orchard. He'd say, I'm going to get you guys. And he's down there with his cane, you know. He can hardly stand up shaking that. And man, we just run like, you know, like he was had an AK-47 aimed at you. You were trying to outrun the bullets. I was scared to death. Run over there, climb over that fence, and try to keep you turning your butt out with a barbed wire. And,
he couldn't have caught you if he wanted to.
Why, he couldn't have got 3 feet while we ran clear across the woods. He's going to get out of there. Yeah, it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. We were risking our lives. But yeah, the kid behind us, Dick Garvin, his dad, he worked on the railroad. He had wooden legs. He was an alcoholic. He had an old clunker car. I don't know what that was, a book that he had or something like that, an old early 30s car. But I can remember when we probably weren't more than 10, 11 years old, he'd let Dick take that car, and south of Indiana Avenue there at that time was all fields. There was a couple of mud roads, like Spencer Street had a sort of a mud road through there. There were people that got stuck and things like that. And there were some like meadow areas down there among the trees, and Fred would let us take that car Dick driving, and we'd go down, drive through there, run through the weeds and run in the mud and get stuck, you know, and push it out. And we couldn't have been more than 10, 11 years old.
But that was a truck, that was a car you depended on to get to work.
But, and in the wintertime, when, you know, there'd be snow on the ground, and Fred would have more fun than anybody. He'd get the car out and say, come on, I'll take you, kids. And we'd hang on his back bumper, and he's 30 mile an hour down the road, and he may have been half shot, but he had as much fun as we did, dragging us kids around on those sleds, and knowing the law, you would never hang on a car. You know, you might get run out in front of another car or something. Boy, old Fred took us a merry ride, I'll tell you.
That's the one that's parked around.
No, there weren't, but...
yeah, it was still... shouldn't have done that, probably.
But, you know, the freedom he gave Dick with that car, I never did quite figure out why he was, why a reasonable man would do that.
He wasn't.
Probably because he was drunk.
Well, it might be.
He'd stop off on the way home, yeah, almost every night. He was a railroader, and it was, you know.
Well, he had to ease the pain of his leg, too. He'd go out there, the joint was, the seat and the leg were paraffin, and it would make like a, to fit the stump, you know. And they'd melt paraffin, the kids would go down and get paraffin and chew it, you know, like chewing gum. And he's making his, pouring his artificial leg, getting ready to go to work the next day.
You weren't around there when Bob Wires was out visiting, and I took him over to Fred's place in the back. And Fred was working in his shop, working on a lawnmower, I guess. And I was telling Bob, I said, this neighbor of ours is tough. He is tough. I said, he doesn't have any feeling. I said, he can jam an ice pick right through his leg, not even make a noise. Can? Yeah, so I took him over there and told Fred, introduced him and so on. I told him, I said, I was trying to tell him that you can stick an ice pick right through your leg. And Fred said, yeah, I can. And Bob said, so he did. He took an ice pick there and he put it right through his leg and ran it through, and it came out the other side. And poor old Bob Wires almost fell over. And by that time, it was not a heavy oak. It was a plastic kind of a thing, hollow and with holes in it, you know, to make it even lighter. So he'd just find those holes and just feed it right through there. But he could get it. He got around good. He could swim.
Take the leg off and jump in.
Take the leg off and jump in.
The whole stump would just go flopping.
He took us over to a dam. I don't know where it was. And
that was Drake's dam.
Well, I guess it was. But I've flopped many times. They didn't have to beat stuff into us or anything. They'd tell us, and that was sort of gospel, and that's what you did. If they told you to brush your teeth a certain way, that's the way you did it, and that's all there was to it. And
you didn't have the option of questioning.
No, you didn't. No, they didn't say, well, would you like to do it this way or that way? They say, this is the way you do it. That's the way you did it. And that's what all everybody that I knew at that time of was basically the same way. There wasn't any back talk. There wasn't any problems with the law much. We didn't have the problems in school. Teachers were practically sacred. You wouldn't think of saying anything to a teacher. In fact, I'm still afraid of teachers. I told somebody, oh, there's a wife of a guy in our barbershop outfit, and she's a school teacher, and what was it, something, I was sitting down, and I said, no, I'm still afraid of school teachers, you can sit over there, she teaches little kids.
Well, that's one of the questions, what did they think about education? I mean, you're in Long Greenfall.
Well, they both only went to the 8th grade, and I never really heard them say, you got to finish high school or anything. It was just understood, we were going to high school. Nobody ever mentioned to me that you got to go to college or anything. In fact, it seemed probably I would never go because there wasn't any money to go to college. They had not, and I guess Molly had gone to a 2-year to learn how to be a school teacher, something like that. She was the most educated in the family. And there was no emphasis on education whatsoever. Yeah. I never got any problems with bad grades or anything. You know, I got C's, once in a while a D. Nobody ever said anything. Nobody checked my homework. Nobody, I sort of on my own. I just...
Well, we were told to do homework, yeah, and they got us that desk.
Yeah, they made it possible, but they, maybe they felt that with only an 8th grade education, but actually they were better educated than a lot of high school kids today. And they knew English. They knew basic mathematics, and they knew English and writing and all those things better than most kids probably that graduate today. With an 8th grade, of course they were taught
all those
basic subjects earlier. Because a lot of people never went past the 8th grade. That was, if you got to go to high school, that was fantastic. That you were rich, or you didn't have to quit school and go to work. Or go out on the farm or whatever.
I never heard the word college mentioned at home. I
never.
And when I came back from in the Army and talked about going to school, by that time, of course, I was on my own and we were married. And
I was in the same boat, but the time I got to the point where I was thinking about college, Dad had had his heart attack, was retired, there wasn't any money, so you couldn't expect any help. Whatever you did on your own.
Well, I guess we both depend on going on the GI Bill.
To work for that. That's a good deal.
If it hadn't been for that, I wouldn't have gone. I know that.
What made you decide to go? Because it was available? Or didn't know what else to do, or what?
Well, it was sort of obvious that you'd be better off to go to college if you could. I mean, I didn't have anything, I didn't have any trade to follow, or...
Yeah, offspring.
Which would you prefer, a chicken or pizza?
Whichever is the less common.
That's, the restaurant's doing the work.
Which would you rather have?
Colonel Sanders, or... They're not as makes good pizza.
Yeah, they do make good pizza.
Now, wait, we can get it.
All right.
I've got that.
I said I'd prefer it.
No.
Pizza, well,
I
do it. Okay. Yeah.
You
can't
have
anything else.
Yeah,
I said
chicken.
Whatever
you'd rather have
to eat.
What do
you like, Bob?
I like both. I like just about everything.
You like everything on pizza?
Everything except anchovies.
What about you? Anything? Okay.
Anything
and
everything, except anchovies.
Well, I had intentions, and I'm not sure that I really thought through all that much, but I guess I had thoughts that I was going to be a mechanical engineer when I was even in junior high school, because that's why when I went to Harvard then, I jockeyed around, and instead of taking the straight vocational course, I negotiated a special deal, and I took college prep courses. And if you took a vocational course, you had shop math, shop science, English, history, shop, drawing. And I knew that if you went to college, you had to have something more than that. And of course, you had a college prep course. So I went and talked to the superintendent and the principal of the school and the superintendent of the vocational course and told them what I had in mind. But I wanted the practical experience of shop and the training and the mechanical drawing and whatnot. But I wanted to take college level math and science courses. So they put me in that. So I took college prep. I took plain geometry, solid geometry, and so on, the chemistry, those kind of things that all the college prep kids were taking. But I also took grafting and machine shop and co-op and those kind of things. So that was my intent. And when I was in the Army and over in Germany, and that concern we were in over there, I got involved in the electrical system and the thing and found that was very interesting. So I decided electricity sounded more interesting. That's how and when I switched my interest and decided to study electricity when I got back. So, and I don't know that I can tell you exactly why I didn't. I went to the library and looked through books and, you know, course offerings and whatnot, and I remember seeing one for RPI, and then it looked Veterans Vocational School with the electric construction maintenance course, and boy, that sounds just like what I'd like to learn. So it's worth going, it's just that simple.
Well, I got involved with, I saw an ad in the paper for Milwaukee School of Engineering with a concentric curriculum where you could drop out at any one time and still have an education. And, when I went there, I guess I figured I'm probably getting a degree, but by then I was all enthralled in this magic refrigeration business because I'd worked at the cooler. And the cooler was the elite place in town, with the nice shirts that the inspectors wore and all that kind of stuff, you know. And during the war, they had a big program going on. So anyhow, I went to work there right after high school until I was drafted, which wasn't very long, but at least had a few months with them, and that's when I decided to go into refrigeration. And when I got out of service, what I did, Milwaukee, I did a course in refrigeration air conditioning, and I started with refrigeration service and then heating and this, that. But I didn't get a degree. I had two kids before I got out. I should have stayed somehow and got a degree. But it would probably have been an electrical engineer.
You were on short, weren't you?
No, I had about a year short to get the degree, because I only really went 24 months. It was as a technician, but anyhow.
But at the time, the degree wasn't, I mean, to say you had a college degree
Well, you ain't got a job offer, didn't you? What took you out?
Well, that was, yes, I did get a job offer back at the cooler again, yes. So, at one point I thought I was going to, I don't know, that was one of the stupidest things to think that I would come back to Marion, take this job offer for a while, and then go back to school again and finish up, because by then I had three kids, you know. That's the end of the education. But anyhow, it turned out to be a good education for what I've done. Very practical. Very practical. But you can't go very far in engineering without a degree. So that's why eventually I switched to marketing or to sales, because they don't really care that much. By the time you got involved, you got to have a degree. Just even for that, for anything.
Consider, right? Yeah. That's what I mean. It, back then, it wasn't so much your credentials as well.
It wasn't as critical as it is now,
right?
Yeah.
But you'd have gotten a lot farther possibly if you'd had a degree.
Well, it should have been plenty.
That's probably destroyed my mind. What I've seen.
If you've got, after you got transferred to Akron, now, chances are if you'd have had a degree, might have been promoted higher up.
Well, I'm sure you would. You know that you were, that the part of the, that they keep asking you or throwing up at you that you didn't have a degree?
Not really, because, you know, ever since 1967, every job that I had a prerequisite of having a degree, some of them master's degree. The job right up to preferably a master's degree.
Yeah.
But I was very fortunate in that the people that I was working for said, well, you know, but we don't have to worry about that. I know what you can do. You know, when Tom James made me plan engineer, he said, you know, that doesn't have to be that way. We know you can do it, so you do it. And then when I went up, when the job came open in Akron, and Don Phillips sent me up there, Ed Kastenmeyer, the guy that I was going to work for, said, you know, here's the job description, read it over and tell me what you think. So I start reading the thing that said, you know, required, bachelor's degree at least, master's degree preferred. And I said, well, Ed, you know, I, right there, I'm disqualified. He says, you know, you got to have a bachelor's degree, and I don't have one. He said, well, I know that. But he said, you know, you think I haven't been watching and know what you do down there? Because he was the director of plant engineering for the group. And so I had a dotted line responsibility to him. I mean, all the reports and everything, all the things that we did with the capital appropriations all went through him. So, you know, he knew me by record, at least, and by performance. He said, I know, but he said, you don't have to worry about that. I know what you can do. Well, the question is, do you want the job? He said, the job's yours if you want it. You tell me if you want it. So, you know, I was very fortunate to have guys like that. And right up to the very end, in fact. Then when I was in corporate, and when Uniroyal and Goodrich went together, and then he said, you know, you retire, and Ron quit. And I said, well, you know, they said, can you stay on until we get somebody else? And I said, well, why do you want to get somebody else? What's the matter with me? It wasn't my idea to leave anyway. And he said, well, you know, we're going to have somebody with a degree. Well, what I later found out was that there was a guy up in the law department who didn't know me, didn't know anything about me, and said, well, yeah, but, you know, if we ever have to go to court, the guy's got to have some credibility, at least needs to have a degree. I said, well, yeah, I hear you, but my theory is if you do your job right, you don't have to go to court. I mean, let's do it right and stay out of court. So that guy that got the job done has now been transferred to Greenville, North Carolina. He's down there now, sweating it out. So I was very fortunate, you know, and I don't, that's the only time that I ever heard that mentioned, that, you know, the fact that I didn't have a degree was the deterrent. Other than that, but, you know, I had three or four promotions after one night. In fact, when they took out all the overhead department engineering product group, I ended up having to go over to work for Ron Clark. I had to take a three-level cut to get to go to work for the corporate director of engineering. I was higher level than the corporate manager of environmental engineering, and I was just a group guy. And I was two levels above him. I had to take a three-level cut to get below him to go to work for it. So that's where the opening was. And I got like a 16% pay cut. So I wasn't making more than he was.
Did that answer your education question? Probably a lot more than you've ever
wanted. Yeah, that's what time it was, and you learned how to build a watch now.
That's the whole point. I mean, that's why I wanted it. About 17 years.
I would say Mom had a big sense of humor. Dad had more of a sense of humor.
Yeah, Dad liked to laugh and had a good time. Although I don't remember him, you know, telling a lot of jokes, being a joke teller or anything like that. But he enjoyed a joke. Enjoyed. I mean, you know, they used to like to watch. We always listened to Jack Benny and Amos Mandy, and knew all of the old comedy radio programs, and laugh about them. And Mom would laugh. But as far as her being humorous herself, I should have sorts of
any. I don't think she ever said anything funny.
Probably not intentionally.
Not intentionally.
She's about as straight laced as they come.
What were their weaknesses and strengths?
I guess overall, I just characterize them as solid earth type people, the average good, upstanding citizen that, you know, obeyed the law or paid their taxes, and they were never in trouble with the law. They were, as far as I know, never had any marital problems. Just about as uncontroversial, even going middle America that you could find, I guess, would be...
Yep, old fashioned.
Well, they believe that when you say strengths, both of them worked.
Hard workers.
Yeah. Dad's job wasn't a lot of hard work sitting there all day at the fire department, but I mean...
Well, he was rushing up there for what he did on his day off.
Though. Yeah, but he usually did something on his day off. He worked and did things around the house.
Well, in the summertime, look at the gardens he used to put in.
Yeah.
He had like three city lots in garden. Yeah, and then, you know, we were out peddling corn up and down the street. We'd like to buy
25 cents a dozen.
Dozen ears of sweet corn, you know, and then beans and this and whatever they had. You know, we were peddlers up and down the street.
And popcorn.
Popcorn came, man. We'd sit down there and shell popcorn and shell popcorn and blow the dust out.
Maybe you saw that thing he had hooked up with this vacuum cleaner blowing the air out, and then you'd drop the corn through the airstream. And it'll blow all the husks away and the corn will go down into the
can. The corn. I mean, you can have about a half acre, an acre of popcorn. Sold popcorn, we ate popcorn.
Wonder
you haven't had popcorn for quite a while. You did a lot of gardening working
out. I tell Alex. Well, our kids, I mean, we eat popcorn all the time. And Alex does loves popcorn.
Well, it's in the genes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you guys both obviously have a work ethic. But,
I would say so.
And you got it from them, I guess.
I would say so. But everybody that we knew in those days, most everybody, the neighbors
we didn't have any. There's nobody that lived around us that were ne'er-do-wells.
No,
or
in that neighborhood, they all worked common, middle class. So
even though it was depression, everybody had a job, everybody worked, and nobody was rich, but
paid their rent or whatever, and
they had food on the table and clothes on their back, and
it was like almost like the 1950s television programs with Beaver and Cleavers and almost
Ozzie and Harriet
and so on.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
That's about right.
Yeah. Except at least Dad had a job. We never did know what Ozzy did, but he was...
Yeah. You know, the guy that lived next door to us was...
clerk on the Erie Railroad.
Railroad clerk. And the guy next to them was a professional painter. He ran a painting company and...
They're still around Marion as far as I know. I've never stopped in there. Who's running that now, Jim? Probably the old man's got to be
Jim was the last
Jim's
I
probably
knew.
Out of it. Well, I don't know, because he was my age.
Yeah.
And the guy next to them was a railroad mail clerk. He was on the train sorting mail on the train all the time.
The guy across the street was a fireman. He was
a fireman. On his days off, he tended bees and raised horseradish and made Sister's brand horseradish and peddled honey. And I got involved with him with bees there one summer, a couple summers. I went out to help him handle bees, and I had my own beehive, and that sort of thing. I worked with Charlie for a couple summers there. And just, you know, everybody was doing things. You just did things, that's all. I don't know of anybody on the street that didn't work and make a living. And
Gandy was, there was a house that Stuart, what's her name, that lived in. But there were two or three different,
Gandy was a mailman, right?
Yeah, and then the next one was Gandy. He was a regular mail clerk, walked the streets. And then Joe Slagle was, I think he was already retired by then. He was pretty old.
I don't remember what he did.
Burton. I don't know, some of those people may have been retired by then. They were sort of old. They didn't have any kids.
Daniels, he was a window decorator for Euler's, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then he went down to towards Maryville, halfway down.
Bought the White Swan.
Bought the White Swan. That's when they got a divorce.
Yeah, she said she wasn't going to live in that place.
Yeah.
Was that Opal?
Opal Daniels.
I didn't know that she lived down the street.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think they were in the service. That was a Legion deal.
Well, yeah,
that's how they got
on the street there. And then when we used to go to visit them, and when she lived down in Marysville or across from Hasley's.
Well, we went down there
I remember Gugu.
We went, that's right, to Gugu. And I've often wondered if that Bobby Daniels in Columbus that has that big car dealership, wouldn't that be one out of a million chance it was that kid?
Could
he be. Was a year or two younger than you were.
Yeah.
Could be.
One out of a million, ass.
Right? Well, there's a Bob Boyd dealership in Columbus too, isn't there? Yeah. I saw it on the TV the last time I was in Marion. In fact, at the reunion, was one of these jerks was asking me, could I get him a good deal on a car? And, he was half crock.
Well, I hope you said yes. He gave him 20% over list price. I had a wonderful car. One day one.
And I just wanted to get away from him. But you really didn't have to make many decisions when we were growing up. You just went all up through the channels. It was just normal. Everybody did it about the same, and you didn't have to decide where to go to church or not. It was, you went to church and you went to school. You were on time and you got along with the teachers and so on. And when you got out of the out of high school, I didn't have to worry whether I went into the service or not. I was drafted right away within months. I turned 17, I was 17. I turned 18 in December, and I was in the service by February. So, there wasn't any, I never even heard, there wasn't even a word like draft dodger or anything like that, was there? There wasn't even a word like that.
None of our appointments, not from her.
You didn't have to make any decisions. It's easy. You didn't have to worry about dope. There wasn't any. Period.
They were all two-legged dope, so.
But there wasn't. I wouldn't have had the slot. I never even knew what the word was. What the word meant then?
Well, a dope was a dumb guy.
Yes, that's true.
Well, we need to call each other a dope.
Yeah.
But he's called me a dope, vice versa, 10,000 times.
Who has?
You, me. You dope, then we'd be in a fight.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah.
That cat have a name?
Pepper.
Pepper. Well, she wants that on her.
Yeah,
well, guess what? That's what cats are. You can't depend on a person. What's your next question?
Not a question.
He's probably getting so bored that he's
not.
He's probably figuring, geez, I wish this would get over. What time is it?
What other questions should I ask?
Well, you have a bunch of them on your list.
Well, the funny thing of looking back is that as a family, I never heard, you had something on there about grandma and grandpa. I never knew what grandma and grandpa. The only thing I can remember is Grandma Boyd when she laid on that bed in the sunroom there.
Well, that was Boyd, that was Weber.
Well, whoever it was. See, I was a little, I just remember a woman in that bed in there. And who was in the bed upstairs? It was somebody. Did somebody stay in the attic bed up there for a while?
Well, I don't know. That bed was up there. It was a spare bed, but
Where did Grandma Boyd go? Did she die in the house in Caledonia?
She must have. I don't remember ever having her over at our house. I only remember visiting over there a couple of times.
When did Grandma Weber die? I thought she was dead before I was born.
I think.
So it could have been her that was alive, but I remember laying in the sunroom. Could have been her.
Weber?
Yeah. I think she was dead before I was born.
Well, I didn't even screw up that.
Died March 1931.
31. Is that Weber?
Three
How about
old.
Boyd?
Grandma Boyd.
1931.
Yeah. That didn't surprise me.
Both of them died in 31.
Yeah. Well, I'd have been 3 years old.
I think it was Weber that died in the something
like
colon cancer.
1923. So
well, yeah, for Weber, how did she die? Colon cancer?
Never had any grandparents, in effect, that I was ever aware of. I can remember going to that house over in Caledonia, which was catty-cornered across the street from where Molly lived at that time.
Sort of a shack.
Now, I don't ever remember Molly's husband. I don't remember Rinker.
I went out to his house. I remember one time we drove that long lane. It seems to me it was west of Caledonia, down along the railroad tracks, and it was a big farmhouse, big farmhouse, and that's where he was. And he lived there apparently by himself, and she lived in town in her house. That's other time. Now, Lucille would know all that, of course. But,
when we went over to see Lucille, wasn't she telling about that he lived in Caledonia and he went out somewhere every day to farm?
Well, he may have lived there with her.
Their stuff,
no, but I don't think so. I don't know.
Well, anyway,
that'd be interesting to find that out. Not that it makes any difference, but it'd be interesting because I've never known. It is sort of a mystery. I think old Lucille was pretty wild when she was young. She got married. She must not have been 17 years old when she got married.
Really?
Well, she was pretty young because, heck, they were married when we were just little kids, and she's only 13 years older than I am.
I can't
envision her being young, but except that there may have been enough things going on in the house between her, you know, who knows? I don't know. But, I didn't really know her until they lived in that house where Joyce lives right now.
Yeah, well, I didn't either, and I don't remember until after they had kids, I guess. I think they had Betty before I can remember anything about her. I can remember going over there, and Ralph had that old Studebaker convertible car, and I thought that was unusual for a farmer to have a Studebaker convertible.
Well, I think that he and Lucille used to run around.
You remember that time we went over there and they'd been husking corn and was going to burn off the weeds in the cornfield? I got away from them.
Sure do. I didn't think it was husking corn, but I know that.
Well, it wasn't the husking. The corn had been husking was in shocks.
Well, I thought they had Dad come over to do this because he was a fireman, so he'd know. And he was out there burning off some stuff in the field, and the wind shifted. And they had just built that new barn. The old barn had burned down, and they had a haystack out there. And the wind was starting to blow the whole thing towards the barn and the haystack and so on. And these little lit things are traveling. Huh? Embers, and yeah, I can remember. Total panic. It's a wonder Lucille didn't die on the spot from a heart attack.
And they had a single bottom hand plow and hooked it on behind the car And I think Lucille was driving the car, was it Dad or Ralph?
And Ralph was plowing.
Had that plow, he was running. I mean, she must have had that thing floorboarded in first gear. And he was running with that plow, and the dirt was just a flying, plowing a circle around this fire, trying to contain it.
And they did it.
They did it.
It only took a few furrows to do it.
Well, he was throwing dirt for 10 feet. I was just about the end of old Ralph. I think that about finished him off that day. He'd really been through the ringer on that ordeal with the
dad
too.
Yeah.
That had to be embarrassing to be called in as the fire expert.
His problem was he wasn't a wind expert. Yeah.
What he was an expert at putting them out, not setting them, control them and whatnot. Well, I don't. He never really was involved in that much firefighting because he drove the chief's car. He was the chief's lackey. That was his job.
But he was there. When he took his exam to be a captain, I remember he spent a lot of hours after hour studying this firematic. And
memorizing the locations of fire alarm boxes. I used to have me, I don't know whether you had to help drill him on that or not.
No, I never got involved in that.
Oh, man. You know, he had to know the location of every number of every fire alarm box in Marion. Box 27, corner of Church and Pine Street. You know, box 93, that's on the corner of Lauderette and so-and-so street. And, you know, this kind of, he'd sit there and write those hour after hour, page after page. And try this, you know, now I'd have to read him off and see if he'd go. Man, he drilled himself and drilled himself.
And he got done, he took the exam, I think, somebody got a little bit higher than he, and he was second, and the guy that got to be chief was third because of a political deal or something. I can't remember why, but Stafford got to be chief and Dad didn't get it. That was the chief examination. Who was the chief then for years? After the old original chief that was there from
McFarland was the old.
McFarland, yeah.
The old,
and it turned out to be some really close buddy of McFarland that got it. And they took two guys. It wasn't just Dad, but it was Dad and another guy that got sort of. If you went by the score on the examination, which I guess most people thought they would, but of course there are other factors. Apparently they worked including politics. At least that's what we are. But you're talking about, were you talking about the exam for captain or
yeah, when
chief?
I went for captain.
That thing isn't running, is it?
I think it is.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I didn't see any red lights flashing or anything.
Oh yeah, now it's flashing, which means we're almost out of tape.
Well, maybe that's good.
Yeah.
Poor Connie's in there working up the storm, doing something.
Yeah, when company comes, it's a stage 3 panic. We had to come home early to clean the house. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope we didn't really destroy your visit or whatever.
Oops.
Used to it.
Well, is that the end of the thing? Yeah, there were a bunch of questions.
Well, I think
we killed them.
I think we had those off, so. Did he ever really get in trouble with Dad like I did when I chopped on that tree and then he spanked me and I set spikes in front of the tires?
Oh.
Got the little daylight beat out of me. Did you ever get in anything like
no,
that?
No.
Sounded like you were the problem, Jeff.
I had my share of mischief, I guess. Do you remember one time when we went over in the infirmary woods? And they had been burning out stumps, and we were running around barefooted. And my recollection is that we were running, jumping in those things with all the wood ashes, and I jumped in one that still had some coals in it. And didn't you and Jack carry me home?
don't remember. It sounds possible. Yeah, we could have. I don't remember.
I think you and Jack or Marvin Folder or somebody was there and ended up carrying me home. And I jumped in one of them things with burning coal at the bottom of it, you know. That's not crystal clear in my mind, but there's...
Sounds something you were dealing with.
I remember. Well, we were all running and jumping in them. I just happened to get a live one.
Remember they had a haystack that they put out in that empty field by the... Yeah. And we hollowed out a room in there. A big room. I mean, we just kept pulling stuff out and had a couple entrances, you know, like Vietnam or something like that. And we had this big chamber in there. It was really neat.
Two little ponds over there, one of them usually dry up, but one of them stay wet all year round. And man, they blew a zillion of polywogs in that thing. Oh, just black with polywogs.
In winter and freeze, that's where I learned to ice skate, basically. This pair of ice skates that Uncle Paul had was hanging up in the attic. And just there's like the old fashioned clamp on roller skates. You clamp on the front and tie on the back and come with your shoes and a wide blade, and that's where I first put ice skates on.
And then he got two skates, and then he and somebody else went over to Grave Creek skating one winter, and I went over there with him with the clamp on skates, and I was gonna learn to skate. I clamped them on about the first two strokes I made, it came off and I fell and cracked my head, and I was darn near frozen, and I carried the skates home and I never had a pair of ice skates on since. That ended my skating career permanently. Never had any desire to even ice skate.
You've hit your head a couple of times. You hit your head in the basement on the floor on a walnut shell or something like that, and you still got the scar on your forehead for that.
Well, we're trying
to explain him and his actions. He's been hit on the head.
Well, I had a...
It's not his fault.
I had a rubber tire. I had a tire around my neck and I had my arms around it, and I tripped. Well, when I went down, there was nothing to break my fall, and it was me and the tire, and I come down on a walnut shell and laid that open to good. Took several stitches to close that up. Then when I was in school, I was swinging on the swings over George Washington, where the seats were like 2-inch thick oak planks.
Yeah, weighed about 50 pounds a piece.
And I was swinging, and somehow the oak was kind of slick, and my hind then slid off of it. And I had to hold the chain, and that plank swung back. Well, by that time I was down, it came back and hit me right in the back of the head, and it laid the back, just laid a gash in the back of my head. I had to go and get clamps put in that. Old Doc Roebuck put clamps in that.
So,
that might explain some things, yeah. Well, no,
it's repeated concussions.
Two or three stars there on my chin where I slipped off that railing up the YMCA pool. When you try to climb out of that thing, it slipped down and hit my chin on the edge of that concrete and laid that open twice at least.
Did you ever go down to Prospect like down there at Newman's? That's where, you know, that's where Grandpa grew up.
Yeah, but no, he was. There was nothing.
There was nothing left. The house burned down, I guess.
I don't know. He never went down there and said, there's where I lived or anything that I'm aware of.
We never went to any of the old cemeteries. Well, I didn't go to any old cemeteries.
Not
with
them. Nope. Well, yes. Well, yeah, we used to take some flowers down to Prospect Cemetery. Yeah, I can remember.